Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Republican lawmakers unveil their immigration enforcement bill in wake of President Trump's mass deportations. Plus, state top education officials spar with Republicans over a proposal that seeks to restore testing standards for students. And investments in clean drinking water and farmers are some of the latest proposals Governor Tony Evers is prioritizing in his state budget. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for February 7th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We begin this week with breaking news out of the state Supreme Court this morning, where all justices unanimously decided that Megan Wolf, the administrator of the Wisconsin's Elections Commission, can remain in her role. And we're talking about this because this has been a years-long dispute that first began back in 2023 when Senate Republicans fired Wolf after her term expired. But the court found that WEC does not have the duty to appoint a new administrator to replace Wolf simply because her term ended. And there was a lot of reasoning, of course, in their decision going through the ruling this morning, JR. But really, it would be odd if conservatives wouldn't join liberal justices on this decision based off of precedent. And that relates to Fred Preen, who was a GOP appointed to the Board of Natural Resources. And that was a whole issue after he stayed on for 2 years after his term expired. So kind of coming full circle here.
Yeah, the decision talks about the way Republicans wrote this law to create the Elections Commission, that they made clear who has the authority to appoint administrator, the Elections Commission. How that process works, a majority of the commission has to vote to appoint somebody new, there goes the Senate. But there was no clear duty in the language of the law. Basically, lawmakers, Republicans, missed a step. They could have made it more clear if they wanted to. Now, you bring up the Preen decision, that's kind of an interesting kind of dork-out moment in the ruling from the day. If you read the concurring opinions, three justices on the court, still liberals, Ann Walsh Bradley, Rebecca Dallet, and Joe Kurowski, dissented in the Preen decision from 2022. Ann Walsh Bradley wrote a concurring opinion saying, look, I still have problems with Preen. I think that's on shaky legal ground. We're not embracing Preen in this decision. I think it deserves a second look, actually. Rebecca Bradley, no relation, conservative justice, wrote another concurring opinion, taking those liberals to task, saying, look, you guys are process-oriented. You know, if you're going to embrace this majority opinion that says Wolf can be in the job, you should be basically embracing the Preen ruling, the precedent been sent. The fact that you are now signing on this argument, this decision now, after dissenting before and writing the concurring opinion, means you are results-oriented. This is all about the process for you, the result you want, not the law.
And this whole legal challenge began shortly, you know, after she was fired, but she was fired largely because of Republicans who were unhappy with the 2020 election results. She's also been a target of widespread conspiracy theories, many of them funneled by Donald Trump, of course, now President Trump, who still has often said that he won Wisconsin when, in fact, he lost to Joe Biden 4 years ago. What happens now? I mean, we'll see. Does Megan still want this job? We have not heard from WEC as of this morning. They say they will be issuing a statement later on. Also haven't heard from GOP leaders about this because, of course, they wanted to not see Wolf in this role during the 2024 election. Also, friendly reminder that even there were some Republicans who wanted to impeach her, but that was also an effort that fell short.
Yeah, and this would, if she were to be removed, it would create kind of a quagmire for lawmakers because, on the one hand, if you have a vacancy, it's not filled by the Elections Commission, you just have to get 4 votes of the 6 members to appoint somebody new. Then the Joint Committee Elective Organization would appoint somebody new after 45 days. That's called by Republicans. So Democrats on the commission do not want to have a dead or have somebody to appoint somebody and turn that power to JCLO because they fear Robin Voss and Devin Lemmy, who chair that committee, would then appoint somebody partisan in the job. Now, I'm not saying they would for sure, but that's the fear. That's part of the driving force for why originally the commission voted 3-0 to appoint somebody to appoint Wolf a new term. The three Dems said we're not going to participate. You need 4 votes to appoint somebody new. That's what started this whole thing. Their fear of what happens if we can't get somebody through the Senate and those guys take over the process.
And speaking of the Wisconsin Elections Commission, two of its commissioners did testify before lawmakers earlier this week. So changing topics here, we had Ann Jacobs, who the current Democratic chair, and Don Millis, a Republican commissioner. They testified to lawmakers as they proposed new rules for election observers, including clarity in how close they can stand to voters when they cast their ballots. However, several GOP lawmakers also raised questions about this 12-page rule proposal aimed at clarifying what Wisconsin election observers can do and can't do at polling places. So let's just hear a little bit of how that committee played out with the dueling arguments at stake.
Can you describe for me what the current recourse is for an observer if they have an issue with a chief election inspector or a poll worker that they're observing?
Without a rule, we don't have much to point to. We can have some guidance, we can have some of that, and the election inspector is allowed to sort of say, well, that's nice. So we're creating these things to fill in those holes so that if there is a complaint, there's things that we can do to enforce it.
You're suggesting that we change the statute with a Republican legislature and a Democratic governor. Do you really see that coming out any better than what this is? And then the question comes back, you know, the question I have to keep asking myself is the status quo better than this rule or not?
So first, to kind of get to this issue of how close election observers can be, this has been an issue, JR, since 2021. So there still hasn't been really an agreement on this. They keep bringing this up, but this has largely been fueled by individuals, some that have been conspiracy theorists, that just want to be a little bit closer to the process when voters go to the polls, excuse me.
And the problem for them is state law says no closer than 3 feet, no farther than 8 feet. So right now, clerks have that discretion, that window, and you can't exceed state law through the rules process. There were members of the commission, when they talked about this package, said, we should recommend it be no more than 3 feet. And Ann Jacobs, the Democratic chair, said, wait, we can't do that. The state law says 3 to 8. Well, if you listen to the testimony from the hearing, number of people who came up through our election observers said, we're getting all these problems from rogue election officials, in their words, that we're being asked to leave polling sites, being booted. We fear that this rules package is going to give them more fodder to kick us out. And Don Millis kept saying, this is meant to provide certainty of what you can and can't do, to fill in the blanks, because there's wide latitude right now for clerks what they can do. The rules would fill in some blanks. The issue for this whole package is kind of twofold. One, Republican lawmakers don't like the commission doing rules, period. Mm-hmm. Ever since 2020, with the complaints about the election, Megan Wolf, the whole nine yards, they would rather do the legislative process, have it passed through state statute. The problem is, you have Republican lawmakers and Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Whenever Republicans open the can of worms that is election laws or election regulations, there's a pressure from some of their base to add all these kind of fringe issues that drive the Trump supporters crazy. Well, if you add those in, Evers won't sign it. So there's that issue, okay? Two, we have right now a decision for the court, Supreme Court, about what authority the Joint Committee for Ministry Rules has going forward, right? It deals with therapists and conversion therapy and some other stuff. Well, that will impact the JCRA process. So Republicans are hesitant to do any rules package, period, because they want to know, what's our authority going to be, right? What's the court going to do to us going forward? So it doesn't sound great for this package getting passed by the legislature, because remember, the process is this committee heard testimony. The committee has the option to make a recommendation to JCRAR to uphold it, to suspend it, or reject it, or to make modifications. Then it's up to JCRAR. They have the ultimate say about this rule package, unless the court steps in and says, you lose that. Then what happens? So talking to people, not real optimistic it's going to get done anytime soon with the legislature.
And it's been an issue, like I said, for the last 3-4 years. I don't know if we're going to get any clarity during at least, February primary, April election, but shall see. All right, moving on to immigration and that issue. As we've talked about for a few weeks now, that Republicans were going to propose some enforcement bill. Well, we got those details earlier this week. So here's what the bill would do. It would require county sheriffs to help federal immigration officials find individuals living in the country illegally. That means sheriffs would have to request proof of U.S. citizenship for those being held in county jails only for felony offenses. Now, if sheriffs don't comply, counties would lose 15% of state aid, also known as shared revenue, right? It wasn't too long ago. Lawmakers passed that huge deal to boost shared revenue to every municipality across the state, and that helps pay for things like police, fire, other essential services. Meanwhile, talking to municipal leaders like Milwaukee County supervisors, they, of course, were widely opposed to this bill. And right before the bill was unveiled, Governor Tony Evers also got a hint of it, talked to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about it, and vowed to veto it. So Republicans here in this video are kind of responding to the pushback from Governor Evers. Meanwhile, you also hear from Milwaukee County Supervisor saying, hey, we're already stretched thin right now, so if this were going to go in place, Milwaukee Police Department wouldn't really have a lot of funds going forward. So let's take a listen.
As other states around the country start to partner with the Trump administration to remove these individuals from our country, we will become a magnet for these types of individuals to say, if I come to Wisconsin, the governor there is not going to turn me over to the Trump administration, and it's going to make our state even more unsafe than it is today, because he is sending a signal to the rest of the country, hey, criminal, illegal aliens, come to Wisconsin. We're not going to partner with the Trump administration. And I think that's dangerous for every community, regardless of if their sheriff is complying with this or not.
This is every county in the state of Wisconsin. They're all facing this issue. It's not Milwaukee County alone. But Milwaukee County is the only one that is required to patrol state highways, and we're not given any additional funding for that. So the county sheriff in Milwaukee County is particularly overburdened and underfunded from the state government, and now they want us to stretch that force even thinner to confront a problem that isn't really one.
Another caveat of the bill would also allow sheriffs to seek reimbursement from the federal government for any costs incurred when they are holding an individual. But again, you know, this is an issue that we knew was going to come up. This is also a very dueling proposal to Democrats' bill that would not require law enforcement to partake with any ICE officials who are on the grounds. Neither of these bills are likely going to go anywhere.
So look, there's the policy Republicans believe in. Copycatting off of what's happening at the federal level right now with the Trump administration to try and crack down on those here without documentation. But there's also the politics of it. And the politics is that Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, wants to get some of these new members on record about where they're at on immigration, because there's an election in a year and 10 months in which they may be pressed about these issues. Now, is immigration going to be a huge issue in 2026? Maybe. You know, I really can't predict 2 months from now, rather than 2 years from now. But this is something you're going to see. We've worked with the legislature trying to pin folks down on where they're at. The second thing to remember is the penalty. There was a bill like this actually last session. The penalty was added this session to pull back your revenue, in part because what's the enforcement mechanism for Dane and Milwaukee counties? They're the ones who are kind of like the boogeyman for Republicans' this whole issue right now. Don't forget the feds are now starting to try and seek enforcement against locals for not complying with these directives. So Trump administration filed suit in Chicago and Illinois, I believe, Thursday this week. So that may set the stage for what might happen to Dane and Milwaukee counties and other places in Wisconsin if these bills go nowhere. So watch that dynamic play out as well.
All right, let's move on to the DPI race, the Department of Public Instruction, because this week, two out of the three candidates running for that office did partake in a WisPolitics forum just yesterday. And there was a wide-ranging topics that were covered, things like Act 10, increasing school funding, the Trump administration's push to abolish the education department. So who partaked in this? That was Sauk Prairie Superintendent Jeff Wright and Milwaukee-based education consultant Brittany Kinzer. But who was notably absent as well was the incumbent Jill Underley, who said she had a scheduling conflict, but she did participate in a press conference earlier in the day in Madison. She was there until about 11 a.m. Then she went back, she said, to a UW Board of Regents. But the forum was also hosted during the lunch break on the Board of Regents. So, you know, you could go back and forth. But when it comes to, you know, the political angle of this as well, JR, you know, if you're the incumbent, you're most likely going to advance. You never know. So why, you know, put yourself at risk at a forum? Anyways, let's just still just talk about some of these issues, starting with Act 10, which I found interesting. Of course, it's in likely going to make its way to the state Supreme Court as teacher unions have asked to overturn that law. Jeff Wright is on the side of, yes, it should be overturned. But on the other side, Brittany Kinzer says she believes since it's the law of land, it should not change because she is concerned about the rising costs that it could have if it is back and implemented in the state.
So the dynamic has to change this race from kind of like the moment these three step forward. One, Underley's got some baggage, some things you can hit her on. Milwaukee Public Schools not disclosing really the financial problems that they were having before the referendum approved last year. Reading scores, those are not a great look for Wisconsin to have that continued biggest racial gap in the country, et cetera, et cetera. The challenge for these guys is what's their lane to get through the primary. So Underley's backed by the state Democratic Party. We're expecting this primary to not get a whole lot of attention ahead of February 18th, but the state party spends some money that would help. I think Underley and Kinzer both are doing digital ads. Kinzer's getting backed by the school of choice, kind of conservative crowd, though she's not really truly a conservative. She's more of a, cause of a blue dog Democrat in her video with her last year. And then Wright, his best hope was that Underley has irritated some people in the education establishment to kind of weave together the folks who are unhappy with her in that realm, but also get Republicans to kind of hold their nose and say, well, I don't like Underley, vote for him. The primary scrambles that calculation for him. So what I'm watching in 18th is who gets through. Is there a big turnout on the 18th? Who turns out in general? Be a low turnout primary. So yeah, who's going to spend money? Who turns out? Who gets through? Then the question becomes, do you have a true like liberal versus conservative race? Is it overshadowed by the Supreme Court contest, which is really the most viewed by insiders as the more important race in Wisconsin this spring.
Right. Another issue that also came up is that Wright is also trying to capitalize on any issue to knock Kinzer or Underley. Mm-hmm. On the Kinzer side, he did talk to reporters afterwards, talking about how Kinzer currently doesn't have an active Wisconsin teacher's license, actually never has, but she did have a certification to be an administrator in Wisconsin for over 10 years. However, that is, you know, an issue that her opponents are going to knock her on, right? You want to lead, you know, and become the state's top education official. However, you haven't had an actual teacher's license. Will it matter? I don't know. It was a headline first reported by Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I asked Kinzer about it, who defended her qualifications. So everyone's trying to do a little, you know, tit for tat, you know, leading up to the primary, whether voters are in tune with it or even know that there's an election in just 11 days from now will remain to be seen. All right, staying on the topic of test scores, which you brought up, it was a huge point of contention during a public hearing yesterday as well. So Republican lawmakers urged during a public hearing that the state's previous testing standards must be restored, and that's what they're trying to do in a bill. They argued that DPI's changes inaccurately reflected student achievement scores. This also comes after DPI officials changed the achievement categories last year that no longer align with cut scores students must achieve with the National Assessment of Educational Progress, excuse me. This was a very heated argument, I would say, at times between Representative Cindy Duco, who took aim at DPI for changing their test scores and basically saying that you're, quote, failing Milwaukee public schools, who also didn't really do so hot in these national standards scores that came out just a few weeks ago. Meanwhile, DPI has long defended their decision. So let's just take a listen from that.
We got the national reading scores last week. MPS is the worst in the country. You should all be embarrassed. And if this was a private sector and not a government bureaucracy, you would all be fired. I think what you've done here is change these words so that you can cover up all the stuff that's going on so no one's going to actually hold you accountable for how bad the test scores are in this state. And if you've got an answer for it, I'd love to hear it because we all have it in black and white from last week. So I'm asking you guys to do your job, make this clear, and let's figure out how we're going to get our kids doing reading and math at an acceptable level.
If you want to sit down and have a conversation about what we can do to support Milwaukee and figure out how to drive their results, we're on board. But the Department of Public Instruction does not have a lever to push that says make Milwaukee better. We can attempt to support. We can do everything that we can to help them make better decisions. And you saw in this administration the first superintendent in the history of this state step in and withhold funds from Milwaukee until they improved.
So you heard there, of course, a wide variety of opinions on this issue. And this is something that we even knew this was something Republicans wanted to tackle right away. And like you mentioned, it's definitely a narrative in the DPI race as well.
It's also politics involved, like always, trying to figure out for Democrats how to navigate this issue. So like with immigration, I've talked to Republicans like, why do they want to die on that hill of like not complying with people who are accused of felonies, right? Like, mm-hmm. why do I die on that hill? With this, there's going to be a push on Democrats of, okay, Republicans are going to pass these bills, the Senate and the Assembly, most likely. How are you going to navigate this issue? Because Governor Evers even has said that he thought what Utterly did was a mistake. Mm-hmm. It wasn't done properly, it wasn't handled properly. When he signed the bill, though, right, because he's a former state superintendent, to take that authority away from DPI, his old office, and set it in statute. So for Democrats, are you going to go for this bill or not? And if you don't, what's that say about where you're at with it? How do you message that rejection of this bill if you do vote that way?
All right, we're going to move on to our last topic for stock picks, and that is just teasing some of the budget proposals that Governor is unveiling before his budget address, which is scheduled for February 18th. So this week, he announced $145 million to address PFAS contamination, also $80 million to support farmers and processors in the agriculture industry. The PFAS thing we knew was expected, but this is also in addition to that $125 million that has been held up for a few years now.
So a key thing here with the PFAS is a thing called innocent landowners. They're people who didn't create the pollution, but it's on their property. And how you define that is very tricky. Remember, the Republicans passed a bill. So they put the $125 million in the budget. Then they passed a bill to kind of provide structure how to spend the money. Evers vetoed the bill and said, I don't like what you're doing with the whole innocent landowner thing. You would take away authority from the DNR. In this proposal, Evers had an innocent landowner provision. Now, details matter in this business. We have not seen the actual language of the provision that will be in his budget. We'll see February 18th. So Eric Wimberger, Republican from Green Bay, the Green Bay area, very big on this issue, been pushing very hard about it. He called this a concession from Evers, which it might be. Environmental groups said they were open to a limited exception, limited narrow ban or provision for innocent landowners. What's the definition, though? That's going to be the key, is what is that definition? How does it work? Then we'll see if they actually get something done off of this proposal.
All right. Remains to be seen, because mm-hmm. it's been an issue that's been held up for quite some time now. All right. Stock picks this week. We're going to start with rising. Of course, it's spending in the state Supreme Court race that just keeps going up, up, and up.
So we keep seeing ads for both campaigns from Susan Crawford and Brad Schimmel. I was kind of curious. Went back and looked 2 years ago, four-person primary. By about this period, $2.5 million roughly had been spent. As of last check, Brad Schimmel had $2.25 million by himself on TV reserve through Monday. Susan Crawford, $2.15 million. Americans for Prosperity has done $1.5 million between digital ads and canvassing. Now, all the digital buys aren't out there yet. It's laid down. And then A Better Wisconsin Together, a Democrat group, is doing like six figures of ads. So we're well ahead of where we were 2 years ago, even with only two people. We've all seen this week complaints filed against Brad Schimmel because he was talking to campaign trail about having to buy knee pads to go out there and beg for money. Complaint against him for altering an ad. So there's an image of Susan Crawford's ads from her 2018 campaign. She was smiling in the picture. She's got pursed lips in the ad that's up. And so complaints filed over that. Basically, the thing is at 10 already, and we're barely into February. My question is, can it continue? So remember, state parties can make those limited contributions to candidates and take limited contributions from donors. We've already seen $1 million transferred from the state Dem Party to Susan Crawford. Brad Schimmel is banking on the GOP being able to help him greatly in this campaign. What if the money runs out, though? A lot of campaigns, what they do is they figure out a budget, what they have. They count back from the election day and go, okay, I can do X weeks of TV with my budget and be good. You're kind of taking a risk that you're going to get out there and spend all this money now if it doesn't keep coming. Looking at the reports from the Democratic Party, Republican Party, back end of December, so the last month of the year, the Dem Party raised $1.2 million. The Republican Party raised $32,000, 3200. That's a bit of a disparity. And people wonder, well, with Ben Wickler running for state national chair, if the Dems would like drop off. Well, they didn't. So I bring this up again. Schimmel has got to keep this race close financially until he gets national groups to buy in and really kind of invest here, if he can do that. Remember last week, the controversy was these donors, these groups, people put on a donor call with Crawford, pitched the idea of like putting two House seats like in play because of the Supreme Court race. that's gold for Schimmel to make these pitches to national people. Hey, Scalise, Speaker Johnson, other, you guys want to be paying attention to this race because your majority could be on the line in Wisconsin. So I'm watching for now is how's the money flow? We'll see reports Wednesday of next week, get updates from Crawford and Schimmel, how much they've pulled in, and also might see how are the parties doing pulling in money to help those campaigns.
All right, stay tuned. Mix this week, Derek Van Orden.
So, one, he's on the initial list of seats that the House Majority PAC, a Dem group, is going to target in 2026, trying to message to blue-collar voters that they lost a little bit in 2024. Two, the Cook Political Report has got him as a lean Republican seat right now for 2026. And three, we saw reports in the last week for the fundraising in the last month of 2024. He was the most aggressive fundraiser, the delegation, like raised $300K. So he knows a fight is coming. He's raising money for it. The question is that seat really in play? It seems to be, as it's drawn right now, just kind of out of reach. He is the one Republican incumbent who underperformed Trump in their district in 2024. So it makes you wonder why. Was it the spending advantage Rebecca Cook had? Is it because Van Orden's not really embraced both sides out? He's a pretty partisan guy. My question is the environment in 2020 going to be enough to put him in play, truly in play? And B, if Dems don't beat him next fall, will they ever? Because the longer you're entrenched as an incumbent, the harder it to dislodge you from an office.
All right. And following this week is Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party, because he fell short of securing the national DNC chair.
But so going the race, he got endorsed by Hakeem Jeffries, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, had unions on his side. He filed a report late Friday last week, had raised $750K for his race, including $250,000 from Reid Hoffman, LinkedIn co-founder. Another $250K from a group that was founded by George Soros. Like, he had all this establishment support going in. So when he lost, people went, what happened? There's a perception nationally of a Ken Martin from Minnesota versus Ben Wicker from Wisconsin. Like, they were like neck and neck. Turned out it wasn't that close. In talking to people, though, these things are about relationships. And Ken Martin was basically the chair of chairs, if you want to call it that, with the DNC. So basically an organization that is all the state chairs and their vice chairs in the entire country. In his position, he was the go-to guy for, like, if you don't get the right amount of money from the national party or there's a staff issue, you go to Ken. He helps fix it. Well, in politics, you build up chips, they call them. You know, like, you kind of work relationships, get these favors, and you cash those chips in when you need them. Martin cashed his chips in, and that really helped him win this office. Now, the question for Wickler, what's next? Mm-hmm. Term's up in June. Talking to people this week, they think he will focus on the Supreme Court race this spring, throw himself into that, not to make a decision, but I reported last week that there are already people making calls about running for state chair in June if Wick doesn't run. Joseph Pecky is an operative in the Milwaukee area. He told me that, yes, he's been making calls. Will Garcia is the third CD chair over in western Wisconsin. He's been making calls. Others have been floated. Like, Kelda Roy's told me she's been encouraged to think about running state senator.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Alex Lazary is a DNC member. I was told by my sources he's probably not going to run for state chair. It's all about Wickler not being there. If Wickler wants to run, it's his.
Yeah, people are like, please, keep going.
He is a phenomenal fundraiser.
Yeah.
But the fact he pursued such a high-profile job
usually means you want to move on, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
So the bet's against the one running against in June, but he's got a task ahead of him right now with the Supreme Court race. That'll be part of his legacy if they win that election this spring.
All right. It's definitely we're keeping tabs on it and what he will do next. All right. That will do it for this week in politics. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.